Hey, thank you so much for sticking around, and I'm happy to be the last speaker of this session, which I thought was a very interesting session because there was a lot more mechanistic modeling approaches, and that's what I do. My name is Jacob Postman. I'm from the Netherlands originally. I'm in Jonathan Lynch's lab, and I'll be talking about simulation of a Rankine function in phosphorus deficient maize and bean, and show how we use a model and a mechanistic approach to understand how a certain root trait can affect nutrient uptake. And I used for my modeling approach SimRoot, which is a model that some of you may know, and I'll show you and present a new rewrite of SimRoot with new functionality. So a Rankine is RR spaces in the root cortical Rankine, and they're formed through programmed cell death. And we had talks before in these meetings on the Rankine and drought, also from our lab. And the Rankine, as said in that talk, is usually associated with hypoxia, low oxygen conditions in the soil. And then the function of a Rankine is thought to be oxygen transport from above ground to below ground so that the roots can maintain their respiration. However, a Rankine forms also in response to nitrate, sulfur, and phosphorus deficiency, and so it seems to be a more general stress response. And so we are asking what could be the function of a Rankine under nitrate, sulfur, and phosphorus deficiency, and obviously oxygen transport is not a likely explanation. And so Fenn et al. Showed that roots with a Rankine have actually, they contain less phosphorus, which is logical. Air spaces don't contain phosphorus. And so if you have 30% cross-sectional Rankine, as you see on the x-axis, you'll have a 30% reduction in phosphorus content. Also, the respiration is reduced in roots with a Rankine. If you have 30% Rankine, you have 50% reduction in root respiration. And we explain that because the cortex is usually more active in their respiration than the steel. So the reduction is even more than a one-to-one. So the idea is that a Rankine allows for less phosphorus in the roots and less respiration, and so the carbon you save on your respiration could be used for root growth and soil exploration, and that phosphorus could be used for being a little less stressed, could be remobilized in the plant. Then I added a third function, which is totally hypothetical, but I still think it's interesting. And that is that maybe a Rankine could mitigate negative effects of tomato closure on photosynthesis. So this is sort of the idea that if oxygen can diffuse from above ground to below ground, maybe CO2 can diffuse from below ground to above ground. And in phosphorus deficient plants, photosynthesis is reduced as the stomata close. And despite the closure of stomata, Jacob and Loyalist showed that the CO2 pressure inside the leaves actually went up. Then Lee and Jones reviewed several papers that show that marsh plants probably can use root CO2 that was produced in the roots in the shoot. But of course, these plants also have more air spaces in their shoot. So they're not really a model plant for maize and bean. But then recently there was also a publication that showed that a lot of CO2 from the roots can be transported through the xylem up in trees. So I added this hypothetical function that maybe a Rankine could mitigate negative effects on photosynthesis. So my hypothesis is that a Rankine is an adaptive trait in the phosphorus deficiency, and by reducing the cost of soil exploration and mitigating negative effects on stomata closure. And I used a modeling approach for that, trying to see if those small-scale effects of respiration and reduced phosphorus in the roots really make sense at a whole plant level. And so I used for that SimRoot. And here's a little movie of SimRoot showing you development of a root system. So SimRoot is a functional structure model, simulating root architecture in 3D space. And we can attach all kinds of attributes to that root architecture. Here in color, you see a parenchyma formation over time. So my goals and approach to modeling was scaling up small changes in root physiology to the whole plant level and see if they have quantitative significance using a mechanistic and quantitative approach. And then I have to say a little bit about positive and negative feedbacks, because these models have positive and negative feedbacks. For example, if you have a little bit more root growth because you have a little bit more carbon, then that allows you to take up more phosphorus, and it allows you to be a little bit less stressed, and so you can do a little bit better. And so over time, there is sort of a positive feedback, and that was also part of our hypothesis. And so I wanted the model to behave well with these positive feedbacks and use a predictor-corrected integration method so that we wouldn't, you know, blow our results up. And I checked carbon balances and all that in the model so that we know that for sure we're not making numerical errors. So I simulated three functions, a reduction in respiration, a remobilization of phosphorus, and an effect on photosynthesis. And I did that, I separated them separately and in combinations, and I did it at 13 different levels of phosphorus availability. Using SimRoot, and here's still a schematic version of SimRoot. SimRoot has an architectural root system, which is built up of root nodes, which form root segments, and root segments form roots. And we can attach to root nodes attributes like, you know, parenchyma formation, respiration, phosphorus uptake. And then we also have a shoot that growth, and of course, the phosphorus status of the plant affects leaf area expansion, and so that affects then photosynthesis and so forth. So that's a very quick overview of SimRoot. We use for nutrient uptake the Barber-Cushman model, which I reproduced from Itoy's and Barber's paper. It's the version with root hairs, and so you can have a phosphorus uptake, and here you see an image of a root system with depletion zones around it, sort of transparent, and there's a little image of root hairs there, which I created. So here you have two root systems growing, and they're initially the same, but soon you will see that the one with parenchyma on the right, it has more root length than the one on the left, and is growing faster. So I hope you can see that, and especially so the roots with parenchyma do have higher soil exploration. And so we can sort of see how the plant dry weight relates to phosphorus content in the soil, and we get a typical, you know, sigmoid curve as a, you know, response to phosphorus availability in the soil for maize, and I did it for bean too. And then we can look at what the curve would be for parenchyma plants, and these are the curves for the plants with parenchyma, and so you can see they have more plant dry weight across the different soil concentrations. So we can look a little bit more detail with these models at, you know, how is carbon spent in the model. And I plotted here a high P plant and a low P plant, and then next to each other there are bars for a plant with parenchyma and without parenchyma. And so you can see of a daily carbon budget after 40 days, how many grams are spent on root growth. And you see the plants in with parenchyma have significantly more carbon after 40 days to spend on root growth. They relatively spend less on respiration. And then when we could do the same for the shoot, and you see that plants with parenchyma also can spend more carbon on the shoot because they're less stressed. And so they have significantly more carbon to spend after 40 days. So we can plot the benefit of parenchyma at different phosphorus levels, as we saw that parenchyma increased the growth of the plant. And I did that for the different functions. And so this is the curve for a scenario where I said, okay, parenchyma only allows phosphorus to be remobilized. And the model predicts up to 40% increase in plant dry weight after 40 days if we allow that phosphorus that was in the parenchyma to be remobilized. And it's the same for reduced respiration, and that has a little less effect. And I want to talk a little bit also about the shape of this curve, because you can see that the biggest benefit of a parenchyma is actually in medium P soils, if you look at the respiration curve, instead of in the very low P soils. And we can explain that by explaining a payoff time. And what I mean with the payoff time is that when you have more carbon, you can grow more roots, but for those roots, you also need more phosphorus. So in terms of phosphorus, that takes a little while for that root to take up the phosphorus and make up for its own construction. And as the concentration in the soil drops, that time becomes significantly longer. And so the benefit of having more carbon is sort of offset by being a bit more stressed because you grew more roots. And the model predicts then that the benefit of a parenchyma actually declines in very low P soils. So we could add these two functions up, and then we get a sum of the curve. But of course, we can also simulate both functions in the model together, and we get this curve. And then you see that there's some synergism between both functions in a parenchyma. Then I said I had a hypothetical third function, so we can look at that too. And there we have a curve for photosynthesis, and we see it has it benefits the plant, similar to the respiration curve. And we can add that up again. If we add all three curves off, you get the black curve, if all functions were functional. And then if we simulate that, you see again a synergism between those three functions. And we actually... the model says that plant growth could be 100% larger in the plants with parenchyma than without parenchyma. Now, that sounds like a lot, but at the same time, the experimental work that was presented earlier in this week even predicts for under drought higher benefits of parenchyma than I'm simulating here. So that's then under drought in a genotype contrast study in the field. I did the same for bean. And you can see the optimal benefit of a parenchyma for bean lays in much lower concentrations. And I explain that because in the bean model has much finer roots. And so finer roots have a much shorter payoff time, so that plays less of a role. So we have a less of a negative feedback there. And the total benefit of a parenchyma in beans is less, but that's because beans just form less parenchyma in the roots. Yeah, I'm done, actually. Thank you. For my final remarks, I think we provided mechanistic and quantitative support for the hypothesis that parenchyma is an adaptive trait in the phosphorus deficiency and possible other nutrient deficiencies. And now, the image that I showed in the beginning, I forgot to say, that variation that you saw with the image one with parenchyma without parenchyma was actually just genetic variation. It was not in response to stresses. And so we think we can... work out and use this genetic variation and breed for plants that do better on the phosphorus deficiency. Those could be plants that form parenchyma. The model predicts that parenchyma always is positive and always has a benefit, but plants don't always form parenchyma. So there's a question about trade-offs, and we have several ideas about what trade-offs there could be about parenchyma, but really it's not very well researched. And so they are poorly understood and difficult to include in the model so far. That was my presentation, and if there's time, I would...
Yeah, we can get one. Some questions. Jessica?
Yeah, sorry, my bean was a common bean root system, and so it has a quite strong primary growth, but then it has basal roots coming out. And I believe I used two whorls for the simulation, so it has basically eight basal roots, which tend to develop quite strongly, actually, also in our experiments. They can overtake in length the taproot system sometimes. Yeah.
fibrous root system in a grass species such as wheat?
That's a good question. That brings a little bit the question into, is Arenchyma important in very fine roots? And I assume through these simulations that the really fine laterals don't form Arenchyma. I assumed it was Arenchyma is mainly formed in the major axis and then the strongly developing laterals of that. Maybe you remember Zobel's talk about different root classes if you were there. And so he divided the laterals in several classes, and actually I have to do that for my modeling too to reproduce our images. So if you have a very fine root system, I don't know how much Arenchyma that forms. We should section that, yeah.
Would tissue with more Arenchyma be less rigid, more prone to, let's say, lodging if it's in the stem, or less able to store the soil if the soil is a bit more compact?
Yeah, there could be that. Like, that's a question for the trade-offs. So there could be a strength trade-off, and other trade-offs could be related to water uptake or nutrient uptake. Some people have shown that nutrient uptake was not affected. More recent studies that we did suggest that nutrient uptake or transport, you know, into the xylem from outside is affected. Which
so it could be just an adaptation, for example, to grow taller, quicker, with less carbon or less resources in order to compete with other plants above or below the soil.
It could be, yeah.
Is there a Arenchyma in the stem, though?
In the stem? Well, that depends on the plant species, but yeah. That's a good question. That's, of course, also related to the photosynthesis. If you can transport CO2 into the shoot, you need continuous airspace. But I'm not 100% sure about that because, like in the trees, the CO2 was transported in the xylem, so you need just airspace that allows CO2 to diffuse into the xylem water, and then it could be transported up too. So I'm not sure whether you really need continuous airspace to, from a hypothesis. But, yeah.
Any more questions?
Okay, I'll explain that. Yeah, I didn't explain it very well. So the growth rate in the roots, first of all, we measure growth rates of roots, and so there is like a potential growth rates of different root classes. And I use that for, basically use that as a number for sink strength of the roots. Okay, so the roots have a certain sink strength. And then I have a certain amount of carbon that's available for root growth. And at the moment, my carbon partitioning is based on the idea that the shoot growth is just driven by, you know, function of certain potential leaf area, potential relative increase. And then, but then when the phosphorus stress hits in, start to reducing that. So there's a stress function that says, well, you know, your relative increase of your shoot is reduced because of phosphorus stress. That means that you'll have more carbon left over for roots, and so the roots will grow, start growing faster. So you get a change in shoot-root ratio. Now, if respiration is reduced, respiration is a compulsory cost in the model. So respiration is just subtracted of the available carbon before we start partitioning for growth. So if respiration is reduced, you just have more carbon for growth. You give the shoot what it needs according to the stress function and what we measured in the field. We just, you know, use empirical data for that. And then the root gets what is left over. And I was afraid that sort of this leftover function really would, you know, create strange sizes of root systems, but actually I was surprised that the size of the root system really fitted well with the nutrient uptake capacity of the root system. So, and it fitted well with our measurements of root length data. So, seems to be working quite well. I have to say, for the bean root system, there's the secondary growth component, and that component is quite important, yeah, in terms of carbon partitioning and what you do with it. So I'll have a publication on that, hopefully, in the coming months. Yeah.
Thanks. Any more questions for Johannes?
Just a remark. I would like to validate, because I have a complete data set of the above ground and the below ground. Maybe you can
Thank you. I would love that.
Any comments or questions for any of those speakers today? Gail? Or questions for other speakers?
Yes, I have a question for you. So, regarding the simulation in the Hydrus 2D, I see two possible problems that might happen. One is the compensation, I mean, the sink term, yes? You have a sink term, and the plants are uptaking water from the soil. And in the Hydrus, you have our feathers or Van Genuchten function, which not allowed for compensation. So if you have a partial root drying, one part is drying, one part is wet, so plants do not, in the model, yes, in the reality they do compensate, but in the model they cannot. So this is one problem that you can have in the model. The second is the boundary condition in the emitter. So we saw that in the sandy soil, you had a good, fairly good comparison between the water content and the loamy soil and not. So it might be that you under-irrigating there because the possible back pressure that you have near the emitter because of the soil hydraulic properties, the ability of the soil to get the water from the dripper.
Yes, I agree. So it's really, when you go close to the physics, it's scary about how difficult it is actually, and you also really need a numerical discretization so fine to get the correct harmonic average of the hydraulic function, because you know there's a big jump. It's always a trade-off, because if you want to wait a year for a good simulation study, because it takes long calculation time, so here we run DAISY for 1 year, it takes 5 minutes. And I'm impressed about the numerical scheme we pushed into that. They are very efficient, some of those. But if I really want to discretize my numerical scheme to see all the details, it would take me 3 days to do the same run. So, but you know about that as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the back pressure issues definitely is an issue when you have coarse sands and the various different soil types.
Yeah, mainly if you have low pressure, I don't know what pressure you use or what dripper, but if you have an uncompensated dripper and low pressure, wow. So you might have a big difference.
I know exactly the dripper, and I also know we need to go into more details to explore that. I have several ideas. The talk was just finished yesterday, by the way, because I still discussed with those guys in Denmark. How actually to understand in a model which is 2D, a 3D world. It's not that easy if you come to think about all the stuff. So now Hydrus is now 3D, but I would love that Hydrus also knew something about crops, because it's so simple.
That's why we are linked to
so I think you and me should do some, you know, we have research school and PhD programs, so it could be nice thinking about that.
Denmark.
Is that okay with you?
It's close to the Netherlands. I would like that.
So, but I'm not sure it's all people's email addresses in the program. So,
Are you a member of A3? If you remember of the Agronomy Society, and of A3 you can get into the there's a membership list there. I think it's in the, maybe in the.
Yeah,
you're not
in the
member,
so I won't detail it.
You guys should exchange business cards or something. Well, this is part of the purpose of the session, is to encourage collaboration, so I'm glad to see this is a.
I do want to thank you all, the presenters, for putting their presentations in the A3 sections. I see a lot of these have gone into soil physics. These are the kind of really good things that tie in the biology, the physics of the biology, and the physics of the soil as well, which is really quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and just some parting words. I really appreciate all the presenters. That was a really, really excellent set of presentations for the entire session, and also the audience. I'm pleasantly surprised that we had such a good group and a large group, and excellent questions and discussions. So, thank you very much. A round of applause for everybody. And.